is Rebecca Fleetwood Hessian, host of the Badass Women's Council podcast, and you are listening to part three of a three-part series with special guest Joan Rosenberg, PhD and author of the book 90 Seconds to a Life You Love, How to Master Your Difficult Feelings. And in this final episode of the series, Joan walks us through a practical application around imposter syndrome, and she looks at three aspects: harsh self-criticism, vulnerability, and compliments. This is rich. I'm so glad you're here.
So a lot of the listeners that we have are in business. They're running companies or they're leaders in companies. And one of the topics that we get asked to talk about a lot here is that imposter syndrome, or there's other names for it. But can you use the reset and walk us through how that might be experienced if we're in a work setting and maybe we want to apply for a next level job, and all of a sudden those voices in our head are saying, I don't know if you're good enough for that. That might not be good for you. Would that be an example we could walk through?
Great question. And I think there's three big elements that I would talk about I talk about all this in the book. In fact, I make a comment about imposter syndrome in the book. And the way I want to frame it is to talk about harsh self-criticism, to talk about vulnerability, and to talk about compliments.
Okay.
Because I think those three are kind of underneath your question.
Okay.
The first is the notion of harsh self-criticism. So once we start getting into, well, I don't know if I'm good enough, then we're into harsh self-criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're asking questions of, actually I have a fourth topic here that's good, that's tied to the anxiety chapter. But when we start asking questions of, can I, will I, do I, am I?
Okay.
Can I do this? Am I good enough? Will I be capable? Right?
Yeah.
I, can I, will I, do I?
Okay.
When we start asking those questions, all we do is we put ourselves in a state of doubt.
Ah.
And
it's logical when you say it.
Well, you know, what can I say? Welcome to 40 years. So that's what the 40 years of experience bought me.
There you go.
So what I realized, again, when we ask things those way, all they do is foster doubt. And they foster what most people would describe as anxiety, which, of course, I don't describe that way. If you make a shift to just flipping the words the other direction, I can, I will, I am, I do.
Right.
What ends up happening is you take yourself out of doubt and you put yourself in a state that's more confident.
Intentionally.
Intentionally. Yes. So first thing is, so this was not even on my list, but the first thing is change your questions into statements. No longer ask, can I, will I, am I, do I? You say, I can, I am, I will, I do. That's the first thing.
So fundamental.
Yes.
Yeah.
Second thing, harsh self-criticism. So I look at harsh self-criticism as a distraction from unpleasant feelings. Now, I know harsh self-criticism, that way of thinking, is a problem in and of itself, but I don't look at it as a problem. It is a problem, right? But I don't look at it as a problem. I look at it as a distraction from unpleasant feeling. So anytime somebody starts to engage in harsh self-criticism, mm-hmm. then what's ending up happening is that they're trying to thought hijack unpleasant feelings. Now, what's the most obvious one in this kind of a situation where somebody's wanting to go for promotion? Mm-hmm. It's going to be the state of vulnerability.
Ah, yeah.
Right? Going to be, I don't want to go be vulnerable. Why? Because if I go for that promotion and I don't get it, then what's going to happen? Oh, one of the other seven unpleasant feelings is what's going to happen.
Right.
The other seven feelings are the solve to to choosing into vulnerability every time. If you know that you can handle and experience and move through those other seven feelings, then you can choose vulnerability because the outcome is only going to be those seven feelings.
And 90 seconds of riding the wave.
Oh, you just got to ride the wave. So you didn't get it. Okay, next. You don't stop pursuing because of that. You just choose into what's next.
And it's so interesting. I just saw on LinkedIn, I can't even remember who it was. It might have been Mel Robbins. She was talking about the difference between men and women's response to being fired.
Uh-huh.
A man will make it about the job or the role. Oh, they're missing out, their loss, and move on. Whereas a woman will make it about us, right, and what. And then her point was that the impact is then a 24% reduction in your negotiation for your next job. Because now you've made it about yourself.
Yes.
So now you feel less than, and you're unwilling to negotiate the salary that you deserve. And so this ability to walk through the steps that you lay out prevents it from being this soul sucking, it's about me thing, and just pass to the next task at hand.
Right. Yes. Yes, but let me keep walking down your example because there's even more, right? So,
but wait, there's more.
So harsh self-criticism is a high thought hijack of unpleasant feelings. And you want to, if you know that, you can stop it as soon as you hear this message.
Say that again. So
harsh self-criticism is a thought hijack of unpleasant feelings. So anytime you catch yourself getting into negative self-talk or harshly criticizing yourself for something, stop and walk it in reverse and go, all right, something else is underneath this. What is it that's unpleasant? What feelings am I experiencing that are unpleasant that I actually don't want to experience? And let yourself go there instead and drop the harsh self-criticism. What ends up happening, and if it helps to hear a story that's attached to it, I can relate that. It's in the book. And it has to do with a graduate student that I was seeing many, many years ago who came in and he was frustrated. And he was a doctoral student working on his dissertation, and those are tough things to do.
Right.
And he was really frustrated. But he was talking about that, and then all of a sudden what was coming out of his mouth was, were the words, I'm unworthy, I'm undeserving, and I'm inadequate. But it's like I had one of those aha moments again at that point, and it was like, what? How do we get from frustrated to this? And then what dawned on me is that we don't control that we feel or what we feel. As soon as we become aware, we don't control that we feel.
Okay.
Or what we feel. As soon as it becomes into our conscious awareness, we can modulate it. But we can't control that we're a feeling being.
Right.
Right?
And we shouldn't apologize for it or try to. Right.
So if I stub my toe and I have a reaction.
Yeah.
Right? Or whatever, then it's an immediate spontaneous reaction. We don't control that we feel or what we feel. We do, however, control what we think about and how we think it.
Right.
So if you think about the words inadequate, unworthy, and undeserving, they are thought words. They're evaluative.
Absolutely.
They're not feelings at all. They're thought.
You're putting judgment to the feeling.
Exactly. So that was when I realized he was thought hijacking his experience.
Mm.
Now, and what's interesting is that you think it's equivalent, the kind of badness that you feel, if you will, because those are in air quotes for those who are listening.
Those are air quotes. I was going to say,
because I don't use the word bad, but you think there's an equivalence here, that the kind of, in quotes, feeling bad that you feel because you're feeling disappointed or sad or angry or whatever is equivalent to unworthy, inadequate, and undeserving. Sorry to say, it's not.
Mm.
When you start to self-judge, you're putting yourself in, I can't even describe how much more significant and darker a place that you're putting yourself.
And it's a choice we make.
It's a choice we make.
And we can choose not to.
We can choose not to, by understanding it is a distraction from unpleasant feelings, or at the outset, unpleasant knowings.
Fascinating.
Right? So that's all. So if you get that, and as you hear this, you can stop it today.
Please stop it today.
The next time you start to think it, you shift it over. So that's the harsh self-criticism piece of not going for the promotion. The other part of it then is, again, I think many times it's an attempt to move away from feeling vulnerable,
mm-hmm, right.
As I said. So what's the key to solving vulnerability? It's being able to have the knowledge that you can experience and move through the other seven feelings if they should arise.
If they show up.
Right.
It's not detrimental. It just is 90 seconds that you deal with.
Yeah, or one or more 90-second waves, right?
Yeah.
And then the last part of it is, I want to highlight one other element about the undeserving piece too. So many people use those words of, I'm not worthy, or I don't know if I deserve that. And my bias, and I state this also in the book, is that we should stop using that. Not only should we stop using that language for the harsh self-critical nature of it, we should also stop using those words because I don't even think it's in our human domain to establish that. If you're alive,
yeah,
you're worthy. If you are alive, you are deserving. End of story.
End of story.
It's right. And my belief system happens to hold that on a human plane, it's not ours to decide that. So if you're able to hear this and breathe and use, you know, whatever, your faculties, then understand that you are a deserving, worthy human being. Let's put that question aside. Now let's move on to the next.
Amen. Right? Absolutely. I'm with you.
And it's not even Sunday and I'm preaching.
Yeah, I like it. Do it.
So the last part to your question is compliments. So the imposter syndrome is somebody, and so to what you were talking about there, I think is also somebody who diminishes and devalues the truth of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
That they are the truth of what they've accomplished. So that you already know that you've been able to do a wide variety of things. So if we're into the doing part of it, the accomplishment and how you serve in the world, great. But if you devalue compliments, then and I think compliments serve the role of helping us update our sense of self.
Ooh, say that again. Compliments?
The role that compliments play in our life is to help us update our sense of self.
Oh, that's beautiful. And it requires us to receive them.
And absorb them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not deflect them or dismiss them.
Oh, it was nothing. No, it was not nothing. You had to put, like, I don't know, 10 years into that.
Right.
Right.
Right. That's beautiful.
Right.
That's a strategy in and of itself.
Oh, definitely. So here's, again, there are certain pieces in the book that I particularly like, just in terms of the kind of time it took me to sort these things out and kind of, in part, the unique look, I think, that it brings to how we can live our lives differently, that help us live our lives differently. And a compliment piece is another one of those. And what I come to understand about compliments is that compliments are a reflection of you back to you.
Oh, I love that.
It's somebody holding a mirror up to you and saying, this is my engaged experience of you.
Mm.
So if you dismiss what they're saying, not only are you dismissing their reality of you, you're dismissing your reality of you. Because it's not coming out of thin air. It's not coming out of the blue. It's their compliment to you is coming out of an engaged experience of you and with you.
Which then requires us, if we're going to honor that relationship,
you take it in.
To receive that compliment.
Graciously.
Graciously.
Yes. And go, thank you. Let me stay with that. And if you get consistent responses from other people about doing something really well or whatever it might be, mm-hmm. that you have such a generous, warm nature, what it doesn't matter what it is.
Right.
Then if you start to get that, then and you go, oh, wait a minute, okay. Yeah, well, that's how I wanted to be anyway. Then what you start to do is you can use those that complements with an E of complements with an I, that you can use the complement of complements.
Oh, I love that.
To really go, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I am that way. And perhaps the I am that way is actually who you wanted to be. So then you realize that who you most wanted to be, you already are.
You already are. Mm. Oh, I love that so much.
Or you are on your way to becoming.
Or you're on your way to becoming.
So think of, if you're a craftsperson, think of compliments as varnish over stain. Or if you put top coats on your nails, then think of that compliments are the top coat on your polished nails.
Oh, love it. Love it. And, oh, gosh, you've got my mind racing. And so often we do dismiss compliments. We then let them percolate in our brains about, I wonder if they really meant that. I don't know if that was it. Just say thank you. Just receive it.
Yes. Yeah. And the only reason you'd be asking that question is if you're not giving genuine compliments yourself.
Hmm. Ooh. You know, that's interesting. Oh, gosh, I feel like we need a three-part series for this.
We can do that if you want.
Can we keep going and I'll just divide this into a couple of different episodes? I'd love to go down the path of not only are we... Oh, you said it so well. Not only do we have every right to, you know, be here, we are worthy.
Right, worthy and deserving.
Worthy and deserving. We also each have a unique set of gifts and talents.
Yep.
And those compliments and being aware and receiving informs us, if we're watching for it, if we're paying attention, of who we really are made to be, so that then we can create situations that use that very best in us.
Yes, but I would not say that that's totally an outside thing. It's an outside and an inside thing. Somebody might notice we do certain things well, or again, how we are in the world, that we get compliments for those kinds of things. But the other part of it for me is also people noticing what lights them up, what puts them in states of flow, what their big dreams are. So that what's ending up happening is that I'm looking at, from my eyes out into the world and going, I would really love this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a really important part of that is some, perhaps a mix of it. But the self-definition part where I go, you know what, this, you know, maybe I want to go, maybe I want to go scrub boats, right? I want to clean the barnacles off motorboats. And that's what I love.
Right.
And I do it really well. And it allows me to actually get into a Zen state and I love the way it looks after I've done it, and it lets me to be in the ocean or in the river or whatever it is, right, or the lake, and it's just that's what lights me up the most. Well, if I'm the best at that, right?
Yeah.
And that's what lights me up, and that's what's important to me, and that's what my world is, then great. Then go be the best at that, right? So it's not, that's why the self-definition piece. So that's the person's contribution,
mm-hmm.
right? And yeah. We need people that love to be in whatever that space is, and know that how they're serving in the world is their unique contribution. So it doesn't matter what the it is, but I also want it not only coming from the outside in saying, hey, you do this really well, but from the inside out going, that, oh, wait a minute, this is the mark I want to put. This is what I think I want to pursue.
And one of the things that I find when I'm coaching that clients struggle with is I put them through exercises where I say, I want you to inventory your gifts and talents. And that's different from accomplishments. I'm talking about those things. What lights you up? What gives you joy? And as we first start to talk about it, they want to see it through the lens of whatever their job description is.
Right,
I'm like,
right.
No. It could be something like, I love just the feeling of interaction and kindness when I can serve others. It doesn't have to be something that's specific to your job description.
Right.
And people have a hard time looking in at that because they're seeing it from the outside expectations.
Right.
And I really find it when I'm working with parents who have children that are moving into the thinking about college and career things, where they'll say things like, well, shouldn't they get a quote unquote real job? And I'm like, well, who's to determine what a real job is? You've got to see what the gifts and talents are of this human being, this child you're raising, where you're not going to say, hey, by the way, I want you to be A because they make this much money.
Right, right.
But that has happened so often that then people find themselves in this career that really wasn't the one they were meant to be in.
Right.
And then that just totally messes with a person's head. Now you're living some other life that wasn't meant to be the one that you're wired to live.
Correct. And that would be a reflection of the disconnection of the self from the self. Because you're living a life that puts you in a state of inauthenticity. I'm just doing something. But I don't value it, and it doesn't bring light into my. It doesn't make me a joyful person. It doesn't bring light into my life. It doesn't, you know. So now I'm disconnected from me.
And that is a phenomenon that I get from high achieving women, where they've reached a certain level in their careers.
Yep.
Where they've made probably more money than they thought they were ever going to make, depending on their upbringing. And they get to this place and they think, there's got to be more. Like, it can't just be about working harder and a bigger paycheck, because I have everything that I need or want.
Right.
But I want more out of life.
Right.
Talk about, and I love what you're saying here, is you can be intentional about those thoughts. Respond to that as you would just that comment there, Wade. If I'm looking for more.
And actually, that's sort of how I open the book. I think the first word in the first chapter is the word more. And that I didn't understand. And again, if you look at what I've done and all my accomplishments and things like that, you spend enough time in life, you can do some of what I've been able to do. But I still desire more, but it's not, it was actually a friend and a colleague of mine, Mary Morrissey, she was the first one to kind of shed light on this for me. And she said that, and to use her words, so they're not my words, she says, life is always seeking a freer, fuller expression.
Freer, fuller expression. Yeah.
Beautiful. Through us.
Mm.
So through us, either with us or through us.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal is to see, again, an end goal of the book is that you see yourself as a co-creator mm-hmm. in life or with life. Mm-hmm. And so you're not just a reactor to life, you're a co-creator with life. And so what does that take? It takes you having a sense of what you envision. So it doesn't matter what level you get to, you're always going to desire more. Because that's what life does. Yeah. Life seeks a freer, fuller expression. So then the time at that point you're going, well, there's got to be something more. Well, yeah, then stop and think, what's that more for you?
Mm-hmm.
Is it more time with your family? Is it more travel? Is it an ability to learn how to sing because you never gave yourself time to learn that? Is it wanting to create special experiences for your kids or grandkids? It's like, what's the more for you? Right? So it doesn't
really define it.
What's that?
You have to be willing to define it. You have to be intentional about thinking about is it something that's missing, or is it just that I've reached this level, I'm satisfied, but now I want more of what?
And then So then that's a time for, to use your words, that's a great time for reflection. Mm-hmm. What would that more for me? What would be the next thing that would light me up?
And then giving yourself all the permission to go and do those things.
Correct. Yes.
Yesterday, I was at an event with a room full of amazing women in the city of Indianapolis. And one of the women said in a panel discussion question, when is there going to be time for me? I'm raising kids. I've got this job. I've got this. I'm losing myself. And in the kindest way possible, because it's a room full of amazing women, the others said to her, you have to choose that. And it was this moment on her face where she received it in a beautiful way, but it was an aha moment. And I thought to myself, wow, we're in that place where we have to give each other permission sometimes because we're not doing it for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And partly it made me sad that we've gotten to that point where we think that we're taking care of everybody else and we've lost ourselves in that. But part of it was just a beautiful reminder of when great women get together and how they can lift each other up and give them exactly what they need in the moment. But this idea of taking care of ourselves starts with our thoughts.
Yes. Yeah. That there's, yes. So our fountain needs to be filled. And so it's, in that sense, it also, I would say it becomes really important for whoever this person is. And I would make guesses that she might not be asking for help enough.
Probably.
Or delegating enough. And so it becomes really important for us to have a community of people around us so that we can turn to them and ask for help and ask for the support that we need so that we can take the hour-long break, the half a day, the 15 minutes, the whatever it might be.
Right.
To be able to start to give ourselves more space and more time to reconnect more deeply with ourselves.
And that's exactly why I originally started the Badass Women's Council, which is a group of 7 female entrepreneurs that we get together once a month for that reason, so that you had people, because an entrepreneur can be a lonely job, that you could reach out to and that cared about you and you could have those tough conversations with. And it's been life-changing. It's been a real significant impact on all of us in that way.
Yep. I understand. Yep. Awesome.
Well, this has been amazing. And again, I can't recommend the book enough. It spoke to me in a million ways. And if I'm saying anything to get someone to go buy and read your book, it's the fact that you will find you in that book. And then you will find a very practical, almost simple process for whatever that is that you found about you in the book.
Nice. Very nice. Thank you. Yeah. Very, very kind.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for being here and for writing it and for providing us with some great tips and tools and stuff.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. Yeah, no, I think I say in the book that my whole intention in the book is to give you back to you.
Oh. Maybe that's where I got that. It's so true. I wish I would have recorded myself speaking out loud on the way to Chicago about, yes, Joan, yes. Well, thanks so much. And I tell you, listeners, when you go and buy the book and have an experience with it, please report back so we can have you on the show and maybe it'd be fun to get some of the folks who have read the book back on with you and maybe do some Q&A or something.
I would love that. There's nothing that makes my heart sing more than being able to share the message of the book, the truth. This actually always moves me to tears. I felt like I was sitting on a gold mine for 25 years. For the first iteration of the book, the first concepts that I started to work with the book started more probably 25 plus years ago. And I drew a diagram, and the diagram always worked. And I ended up using that diagram as my blueprint for how I would do psychotherapy, and then ultimately how I trained others to do psychotherapy. And it always worked. And then I began to understand more and more concepts about, you know, that I would get these insights about the harsh self-criticism or about the compliments or the crucial importance of speaking up, or I can go through, or the different way to look at anxiety. But I was working on it and working on it and working on it and using it and training it. But people weren't hearing the only people that were really benefiting were the people I was working with directly or training.
Right.
Or speaking, because I would do speaking engagements too. So it's the beauty of this whole thing for me is that I get to share the gold. So it's not so there's nothing that makes me happier and more touched that I get to serve the message, and I'm able to get the word out about how, in some ways, how amazingly simple it is, mm-hmm. to change our lives and actually really feel like we can, as I said earlier, to co-create with life and go, all right, who do I want to be and how do I want to show up? And you actually have the tools to do it.
Absolutely. So good. And so now we all get to benefit from all of that hard work that you've put in. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not coming
down. Thanks for being here for this three-part series. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the other two, please go back and catch up. They are just as rich. And instead of reflection questions for this series, I'm going to ask you to use what you've learned from these episodes and then report back and let's have a conversation. Let's get you on the show and talk about your experience. I know when I listened to the book and then through these three episodes and talking with Joan, I have just found so many times that I've caught myself using what I've learned from her. And I want to hear about your experience. And I know everyone else would too. Thanks so much, as always, for being here. I hope that you will subscribe, share this with your friends, and leave a rating. That really, really does help us out. I'm not coming down. I never liked it on the ground.